Hey friends, I am so glad that you're here. I'm your host, Erin Cusio, and this is Room for Lovely. Each week, we'll bring you incredible guests with relatable stories and encouraging wisdom who remind us to look for the loveliness in every single day. Because while not all of life is lovely, there is room for loveliness in every single season. I want to start today's episode by letting you know that the topics we discuss today are probably not best for little ears. If you like to listen with your kiddos around, I might recommend saving this episode for a quiet walk or a drive alone. With all that said, despite the heaviness of the subject matter, we laugh a lot during this conversation, because that's who my guest is. Katie Miller is a wife and a mom, and she is exactly who she is. What you see is what you get, and she is the epitome of laughing her way even through the hard times. Today, we talk about Katie's story and the journey that has brought her to where she is today. This wasn't an easy episode to record, and for some, it may not be an easy episode to hear. I hope that in listening, you will hear Katie's heart to remind others that they are never alone and that they are worth a life that is good and safe and happy. To do that, we have to cover some hard things. Physical, mental, and emotional abuse are very present realities for more people than I'd like to think. And when I see people who have been down this road start to speak up about it, I am always amazed and heartbroken at the number of people who respond in solidarity because they have been there too. As we prepared to record this episode, Katie was quick to acknowledge that we all have our faults. None of us are perfect. She also was adamant to emphasize that the two people in this story have both come a long way in the last several years. But one of the final things she said to me off air has stuck with me for quite some time. As she detailed some of the hardest parts of her story, she ended by saying, "My self-esteem was so non-existent that I saw nothing else. I saw two broken people that could fix one another. And that was delusional, I know, but I said nothing and I stayed." To all the stayers, to all the leavers, to all the broken down who are trying to build again, please know there is strength inside of you and you are never, ever alone. Here is Katie's story. Welcome, Katie. Thank you so much for being here on the podcast with me. I am really excited to have you here and so thrilled to get to talk to you. I know that so many people have spoken so often about your authenticity and how important that is to them and how much they get from you because of just how real you are. And I'm really excited to kind of get to dig into that today. So before we begin, would you tell us just a little bit about yourself?
As you said, my name is Katie and I am 37 years old from Iota, little town, but thankfully my sweet husband moved me to the big town of Eagan, which was a whole 5 minutes away. We have five kids together, three of which I gave birth to. I'm birth mother to Ava Grace, Hudson Michael, and Porter Zane. But then I have two great bonus daughters, Juliana Gale and Gemma Eve. So all together we have basically a 20, 18, 16, 15, 12 year old in the house.
That is pretty impressive that you can remember all of that.
We have a lot of practice. Every night in our prayers, we say them in numerical order. And it's like, it's interesting.
I love it. Well, I want to talk about your kids and I want to talk about your husband. I want to talk about all of those things. But for us to get there, we kind of have to go back in the story. And that begins where you and I were connected, which is high school. We knew each other in high school. We cheered together, kind of just grew up in the same little small town. And small towns, God bless them, they have their wonderful little charm. But I want to start with your high school relationship, which really was kind of the launching pad for the next many years of your life. And so if you would you take me back to just a little bit of how your relationship was in high school?
Okay. So I started dating my high school sweetheart. Could not tell me. He did not hang the moon. I mean, he was just everything and some. Dated on and off all through high school. My parents did not approve, not because of him, but because of our age. If you know me even a small amount, you know, you say right, I'll say left. My poor parents, God bless them. So when they were like, "Nope, you're not going to do it," I'm like, "Okay, but I am." It was a relationship. I don't even know at this point in my life, almost 40 years old, if I can say it was true love or if it was love for what love was in high school. But it was a lot. It was good when it was good and it was bad when it was bad. But you couldn't tell me I wasn't going to marry him. So right after high school, I got married at 18 years old. 3 months later, we welcomed our first baby girl. And the rest was kind of history.
I can remember when we were in high school, I like vividly remember being on the football field one day and you walking over with this promise ring that you had gotten from him and just being so excited that you had gotten this. And I mean, you're absolutely right. You could tell that you just thought the world of him. I mean, I know what that's like to be in high school and people around you are saying, maybe this isn't the best idea. And you're like, well, I'm going to do what I want. Thank you so much. Because obviously I know everything there is to know at 18 years old. So were there, other than the age, were there any other things that people were telling you, hey, maybe this is not a good situation?
Funny that you say that. In hindsight now, I look back and there was so many things that I just saw for myself. I mean, it was just a very temperamental relationship. Like I said, when it was good, it was good. It was so good. When it was bad, it was so bad. There was cheating all the time, fighting all the time, red flags everywhere. And on both of our ports, should I say. I mean, I was a spicy teenager, and he was headstrong, and we butted heads a lot, but it was almost, he was the love of my life, and we were going to fix it. Like, we were going to fix each other. Didn't matter. We were going to be there, you know. And you look at your parents as you grow up, and I mean, my parents have been married for 30 plus years, and I'm like, I'm going to be just like them. They were high school sweethearts. I'm going to follow in their footsteps. We're going to raise our babies. I'm going to stay home, all the good things. And so no matter how many flags that I saw, I didn't want to take no for an answer. And so I just followed that path, you know?
So you guys got married. When you got married, were things good for a while? Was it still on this kind of tumultuous path? What did it look like in your marriage?
Same path. When it was good, it was great. When it was bad, it was terrible. I thought a baby or babies would make it better. Thought we had grown up to do. And don't get me wrong, we had wonderful moments and wonderful memories, but kept trying to fix something that was never going to be fixed.
It's funny that you say that, because I think that's probably a common sentiment for most people. Like, maybe they have some concerns. Maybe they even see those red flags for themselves, but they think the next thing will fix it. They think getting married will make it better. Oh, well, having a baby will make it better. Well, maybe if we have two babies, it'll make it better. And it just keeps kind of digging further into this hole where things are not really getting fixed. And in fact, maybe they're even getting worse.
100%. It was a snowball effect. And, you know, neither of us, because we're stubborn, wanted to call it quits, but it needed to be, you know.
From an outsider's perspective, when we could not see what was going inside the home, on the outside, things looked pretty good. You were staying home with the babies. He was working hard. You were driving a nice vehicle. You were living in a very nice house. Everything was the picture perfect marriage on the outside. And then it absolutely wasn't on the inside. How did that feel as you began to realize, essentially, I mean, this is maybe kind of harsh, but I'm living a lie in some ways?
Oh, 100%. And it was exhausting. I felt like I was a constant Facebook billboard, if that makes any sense. Like, I did not want to let anyone know I had failed. Do you know how many girls I had to fight to get this husband of mine? Like, I did not want to say failed at this. So I did drive very nice vehicles. I lived in beautiful homes, and I'll never take that from him. He worked very hard and gave me a life that I would have never had otherwise. Our kids were blessed beyond means. But yeah, him and I, even both to this point now and day, will say it was exhausting. It was exhausting because everything we portrayed outside was the exact opposite once our doors closed that night.
I think it's important to maybe note that this goes beyond just, we didn't really get along. It goes beyond just, you know, we got married too young and we kind of grew apart. There were some really serious things that were going on in your relationship that it may be even fair to say was abuse. Mm-hmm. As you got older and as the relationship progressed, what for you was the moment where you realized, I can't do this anymore? What ultimately led you to get out of that marriage?
Oh gosh, this is not a story that I take, or a moment that I take very lightly. And for anybody that knows us, I do say this next part with prayers that it is not to be looked upon or judged, but more than anything, just pray that they take from this how dark some people can be, including myself, at moments in their life, how much they can grow after the fact. I just have to make sure that I say this before, because what I'm saying, my hands are trembling as I have, like, because I know that this is such an important part of my healing and my growth, not only for myself, but for my kids. So we had moved away out of state for a good bit for his job. He had a great job, and we moved out of state for that. And there was many, it was just a like I said, a snowball effect of bad to worse to almost unbearable. And there was one day where I was leaving to go and get the kids from school. And I walked into our home office just to ask what we were doing for supper that night. And I was going to stop at the store. And I opened the door and I looked at him, and I just knew something was terribly off. Like, his eyes were dark. There, it wasn't him. It was not him. I don't know that man that was there that day. And he walked straight up to me and put a gun to my head. And he, I mean, it was loaded. I heard him, you know, click the little, what is it? I'm at a blank, but he was ready, I guess, to pull the trigger. And I looked straight at him, and we were nose to nose. And I told him to do it. And I said, don't be a coward, just do it. And he looked at me and he started to cry and he walked away. And that's when I knew that if I didn't leave, that not only would one of us end up dead one day, maybe our kids would be finding me that way. And what's funny is that I always tell myself the craziest part of that is I didn't leave because he pulled the gun on me. I left because I begged him to do it. I begged the man that I loved so much to take me from my babies, because I couldn't do it anymore. And that's when I realized that I was so far gone from the person that I ever knew, that I had no choice. And I knew that if I was a reason for him to have ever even gotten to that point himself, because that was not who he was, that I needed to do him a favor myself and, you know, and leave for him. And so I did. And I packed up our kiddos and we moved back home. It was the hardest decision I ever had to make, because it was literally pretty much the only life I've ever known since I was 12 years old with him. We went from kids to teenagers to young adults to parents. And I had to make that decision with no job, no college degree. It was just me and my babies moving back to big old Iota.
There are a lot of layers to that that I kind of want to talk about. The first being, you mentioned your kids in that. And I know that the kids were still pretty young when that was going on. But how much were they aware of the absolute turmoil that was going on inside your home?
It's funny that you asked that, because just the other night, Ava Grace, my oldest, she's always been my right-hand man. I mean, she has been my saving grace. She has gotten me through everything, plus some. I feel like we've raised each other, you know? And she mentioned randomly the other night to my husband a story that occurred in where out of state when we lived there. I would have had no idea. I could have not even guessed for a second that she would have remembered. It was such a very small moment of such a big picture. And she told that story as if it happened yesterday. And she was very much aware of it. And I just stared at her in awe, because I'm like, oh my gosh. And that's kind of when it hit me and resonated with me that I think my kids are far more aware of so much more than I let on or wanted to believe that they were aware of. Granted, my youngest, he was a baby. I mean, he was 2, 3 when we moved home. So it was, yeah, the other two, they definitely, now that they're getting older and they feel more comfortable to talk to me about things, I definitely realized that I did not shield them from nearly a fraction of what I hoped I had.
I think the second thing that sticks out to me in that story is just how far gone you can get with someone and with yourself. You know, I know that when y'all were dating in high school and this doe-eyed cheerleader who just thought that this football player hung the moon was not the same person standing in that home office that thought that they would ever see that far down such a dark road. And so what do you think kept you from leaving before that point?
I feel like that is like the most asked question ever, because, you know, when you're not in something like that every single day, it is so easy. I mean, because I absolutely remember the first time me and some of my girlfriends got together one night and they were talking about, if my husband ever cheated or if my husband ever did this, I'd tell him to pack his stuff. You know, you say all the things and then you find yourself balled up on your bathroom floor, sobbing, begging God to just fix all the things because you don't want to lose your life. Or you question, how in the world did I get here? But it sounds so crazy, and I know this, but there is such a comfort in being familiar with your own crazy. It's scary to go out there by yourself. And, you know, I would always think, well, this might be crazy and this might be toxic or this might not be healthy, but it's not. It's my crazy and it's my toxicity. It's my not healthy. I don't know what else is out there. I don't know if I can survive that on my own, but I know I can handle this because I've been handling it. And then you're terrified, especially when you're a single mom with no work, maybe no college degree like I had. Like, he provided us with everything.
Yeah.
What was I going to do? Take my children out of this beautiful home with this beautiful vehicle, with these beautiful vacations and all, you know, all the things. And I know it's material things, but they had the best life I could have ever even prayed to give them in that sense. How dare I take them to go, what, live with my parents again? Or, I don't know, not be able to feed them the next day? I didn't know.
Right. I think that's important, really important to talk about, because were there moments where you thought to yourself, maybe I should leave, but some of those uncertainties held you back?
Every single day. I mean, where was I going to get supper from the next day? You know, because you don't grow up in a family of knowing there's help for single moms, or if there's, I don't know, something as simple as food stamps, or like, I don't, anything, or where am I? I'm going to have to get a job. I don't have family to be able to take care of my kids every single day. There's going to be daycare. I can't afford that. Like, the list goes on and on and on. How are you going to start a job at minimum wage with three kids? It seems a lot scarier than what's at home.
Right. I totally understand that, because I mean, I would think even the car was in his name. So what do I do? Do I just go home with no vehicle? And it's like this never ending mountain of, how do I climb out of this avalanche? But you did come home and you had your three babies in tow. The first element of that, I would say, is probably it was very humbling for all of these people who had been watching you, thinking, oh man, she's got this beautiful life. She's driving this luxury vehicle. She's living in this huge house. And now you're back home alone with your babies, and it's a small dang town. And so everybody wants to know what the heck is going on, and making up stories that they don't know what's going on. Take me through that part of your life, that season of coming home, being humbled, and rebuilding. Where do you even begin?
It was definitely the most humiliating, humbling experience of my entire life, because now I look back and realize I did not like that Katie. That Katie was very much not who I am at heart. My mom and daddy did not raise that girl. I am so far from being better than anyone. And I know that there was definitely a long period of time where I obviously thought that I was something that I wasn't. I think I would take this version, this humbled version of me, any day over that. I definitely realized quickly who my friends were and who weren't. I mean, I will never, ever forget the first time ever I had a moment of being quite humbled, but so grateful. Was I could not afford groceries at all. And I didn't dare want to tell my parents. And our neighbor, which was my ex-husband's family, she came without hesitation with an arm full of groceries and just put them at my doorstep and hugged me and said, I love you. And that was it. And I will never, ever forget that moment. And I thank God every day for her, because it's scary not knowing what the next day is going to bring. But through the years, I have had such an amazing village and support system. And I think that anybody who ever even thinks for a second, oh, I don't know if I can leave. I was shocked at the people that I didn't even realize cared for me. Or I thought, oh, that one, oh, she talked about me, or they didn't really care for me, whatever. Came with so much love and honesty and just genuine, heartfelt, like, I'm proud of you. Or I saw you from a distance, you know. And it's amazing too that people see right through your glass house, you know, like, you think you have everything so covered, and it's like, baby girl, I've been knowing this, you know. And I'm like, oh, well, joke's on me.
I think having a village is incredibly important, and the kindness and generosity of people around you obviously gets you through that transition, that hard time. But ultimately, you do have to start building something for yourself. Like, you're now alone and you're a single mama and you're having to take care of these kids all on your own. And so what did you decide to do? Like, what was the next practical thing that you said, okay, I'm going to start here.
So it was the good Lord by all means, but where I work now, the owner, the doctor there, she randomly reached out. I was a patient of hers for years. She reached out to me and offered me a job. She took a chance on me, more of a charity case chance by all means at that moment, but because it's no secret, I am very outgoing and very foul-mouthed sometimes and loud. And so God bless her. I know she was really doing one like a solid for Jesus and me at that moment, but she did. And I started at minimum wage as the receptionist. And boy, did I hate it. I hated every minute of that job. And then I just kind of worked my way up. I'm still there. They have become a family to me. They have seen every side of my story, backwards and forwards. And so I just jumped into that. And I had two other jobs. My mom's sweet, precious friend owned an antique shop. I would work there on the weekends. I started back in college. But joke was on me for that, because remedial math is a sucker. And so I'm still four remedial maths away from getting that degree. But maybe one day. It was tough. But yeah, so I just do my little job. And I just, it was by the grace of God and my sweet mom and daddy. I don't know what I would have done without them filling in the, you know, the blanks for me and stuff. But I just worked. I worked. I cleaned a lot of toilets. And tell me if that's not humbling. You know, I used to have people clean mine and I was cleaning strangers. I'm thankful for my upbringing, because I just jumped into and I immersed myself into as many jobs as possible to try and make things happen for my kiddos.
There's two directions of that that I want to talk about. And the first is, when did you kind of see the tides turn as far as we're drowning, we've left, we've got nothing, and we're starting completely over? And maybe, just maybe, we're going to be okay. That's the first direction.
That's a tricky question, because over the past probably 7-8 years, it was more like, I guess the best way I can explain it, like waves of an ocean. There were days where we were on top of the world and I'm like, okay, we can afford Mr. Gaddy's tonight, guys. Like, we're wilding out. We don't know what to do with ourselves. And there were days where I mean, and you know, it's humiliating, but I would walk out of Walmart on purpose with a 4-pack of toilet paper that I stole, because I didn't have the guts to ask my mom for another $20 bill. So that was hard. But like, there are days where I still forget that I'm have a whole husband now, and I'm still like, oh Lord, you know, like, how are we gonna do this one, guys? We got prom coming up. What are we gonna do? It was like waves of an ocean is the best way I can explain it, because there's still tough times, there's still dark times, there's still moments where I kind of find myself back in those trenches. Just mentally, there's also was really, even in our darkest moments, there were really, really good times. I'm thankful for that. But, you know, I don't ever want to take that away from anybody who goes through those kind of things, because I don't think people realize how dark, not even for people in any situation, how dark mentally you can get. So there were days where if I'd get up and brush my teeth, we'd call it a win. There were days where my sweet baby girl would have to force her mama into a shower. You know, so those are tough times. But here we are. Yeah, I mean, we made it.
How many years have passed since you guys moved home?
Oh gosh, we moved back in 2016.
Okay, I'm not good at math. 8 years.
Well, remedial math girl ain't either. So why do you think eight I years. Gave you the year?
So I think it would be easy from an outsider's perspective to say, good on you. You finally escaped and, you know, you made it out of that tumultuous environment, out from under the abuse of a man who maybe wasn't always treating you the best, and you made a whole new life for yourself. Great job. But there were 8 years between then and now that maybe it still didn't always look so pretty. Can you talk about that a little bit?
My poor mama, she's going to be listening to this and probably cringe on those 8 years, because boy, were we in the trenches together. I would love to say that I was one of those girls who was a Bible thumping church going, like, just turn to the good Lord. And, you know, because I see some of those women after divorce and I am very envious that they turn to their faith. I did not. And I will be the first to say that I was the exact opposite of that. And as a matter of fact, me and my Jesus, we had a lot of arguments and talking to and cussing moments and all the things, because I was so angry, because in my mind I took my vow serious and I did all the things, and I just felt like I was left, my world was ripped from under me and no one asked permission to take it. I lived in survival mode for dang near 8 years drinking. Gosh, the drinking, the not caring about myself or my heart or my morals, you know, my faith, anything. A lot of times I felt like the more wine I could drink, the better off it would be. As long as I could just go to sleep. If it would just, I just wanted to sleep and forget that, you know, today or tomorrow happened. It was just, I'll deal with it then. And, you know, now I look back and I'm like, my poor sweet baby. I was in such a bad place that I was so selfish. And I didn't take it, you know, they had to grow up a lot on their own and do a lot of things for themselves that I will never be able to get those moments back for them. But thank God for my babies and thank God for my parents and my siblings and, you know, my family, because they loved me so hard through it all. And my sweet mama, I know she's probably hit every novena that a Catholic woman could hit in those 8 years, but it saved me. I mean, and you know, by all means, I'm still not the Bible thumping, you know, greatest Catholic that's ever going to walk the earth. I'm a work in progress, but gosh, I've come so far, and nobody else has to be proud of me, because I'm telling you, I know what I've done and I am proud of myself right now.
From a relationship standpoint, over the course of the last 8 years, there have been a few relationships along the way, and I think it would be easy to look at the relationship that you had with your ex-husband and say, okay, I see all the red flags. I see the pain that I went through. I see the things that I had to endure, and I'm not settling for that anymore. I'm not going down that road anymore. But that wasn't always the case.
Right. Because I would have loved to say I've learned my lesson and, you know, I'll never go back to something like that. And it was like I was so attracted to the color red, I couldn't even stand myself. It was like, oh, that one's kind of green. That one's beige. Let's do the red, Katie. And I did it over and over and over again. And then right before I met my husband, I had about a 2 to 3 year relationship, which was my longest one that I had through the course of the 8 years. And I fell right back into that familiar place. Like I said earlier, you are comfortable with what you're familiar with. I knew crazy. I knew chaos. I knew abuse. And I was comfortable there. As ridiculous as that sounds to normal humans, I was comfortable there. And it almost felt safer than something that was safe. I know that makes no sense, but I was used to being survival mode. And so I clung to that like it was everything. Funny enough, that last one just about did me in more so than maybe my own marriage.
I would think that I know that there have been moments where you've been vulnerable to some degree on social media with your past experiences and just some of the difficult things that you've endured. And just in comments on those posts, I've seen people resonate with what you've shared. And so I would think that maybe there have been people who have reached out to you in private who have gone through similar situations just in a moment of solidarity or to ask for your advice. For those women, I guess it's a two-part question. Do you have any advice? And then secondly, do you see some of those same patterns in those women of this cycle of just going through this less than positive treatment?
Oh, for sure. I definitely think too that what people tend to not realize is when you are, you know, your self-esteem is low, you are second guessing yourself. You've been told so many countless times, you're no good, or you're this, or you're that. Nobody's going to want you. You're, you know, all the things. You become that person. You believe everything that is told to you. And it doesn't matter what anybody else says, you are that person. And there are days that I still am that person. I always pray for those women who would reach out to me and stuff, because I do. I try to keep things very light on social media. I always like to be the one to make fun of myself first before, you know, anybody else gets to have that. It's scary to think that you would constantly go back and back and back to something. It's scarier to not. And I get that. That's all I ever tell people when they reach out to me about things like that is you're so much stronger than you realize right now. You just got to find that small piece of you that's left and hold on to her. And I know it's a lot easier said than done. But once I found that small piece of me that knew better than all the things that was constantly told to me and made me become that person. Well, then, I mean, I was hell on wheels after that. I was like, I'm out of here. Like, I can't keep doing this. This is wild. Like, who am I? Got to get to that point, you know? Like, I mean, and I say this often, before I met Johnny, or well, he'll say before I gave him that second chance, I thought God forgot about me. And I didn't blame him. You know, I was like, I don't even blame you for not blessing me like you're blessing these other girls. I'm like, this chick just got out of a divorce 2 weeks ago and she's already happily married. Like, it takes me 4 years to even decide if I like this guy. And we're bringing him to Easter this year, Mom. I mean, it's a running joke in my family because I didn't have like long, serious relationships. I just had relationships. And that's whenever the ornaments with the faceless people would come out. And I just obviously had a thing, I guess, for bearded men. And it was a running joke with my mom and them that we had an ornament every Christmas. But thank God they were faceless because it was just a beard. So it really didn't matter if a new one would come the next Christmas. We still could hang all the ornaments. It's funny now, but it was kind of not funny all these Christmases. I hope that if anything, I can give them some type of, you still got it. Like, there's still somebody out there. Like, if the good Lord didn't forget about me, honey, he has not forgotten about you, I promise.
Well, I want to talk about Johnny because in the last 6 months, year, your life has just completely changed from where you were several months ago. So tell me about you and Johnny.
Oh, Johnny boy. So 6 years ago, he randomly showed up at my mama and daddy's doing something outside with the yard. I have no idea. And my mama, oh, Johnny. Oh, Katie, Johnny, he's so cute. He's so sweet. And on and on and on. Long story short, she convinced us somehow to go on a lunch date. So we did. And after that lunch date, I don't even know what happened. I told him he was too nice. Long and short, I told Johnny he was too nice. Go figure. And then I went and spent the rest of the 6 years being crazy. I don't know. He asked my middle son to go and work for him, just like do little odds and ends jobs. And oh, Hudson Michael, he came home one day and he's like, Mama, Mr. Johnny, he's a cool guy. Yeah, I just feel like you should maybe give Mr. Johnny a chance. And I'm like, oh, Hudson, been there, done that one lunch date. He's too nice. He would never stand a chance with Mama. Like, he, there's no way. The rest is history. He called me on his way to work and we chatted about Hudson and how hard of a worker he is, which was shocking to me because he doesn't, he's not that kid at home. And later we got married. Like, make it make sense, Lord, we got married. And that's when I knew baby Jesus hadn't forgot about me.
So, I mean, there's probably people listening to this right now who maybe don't know. I mean, because if we know you and we're friends on Facebook, we know that you've recently gotten married. So it's not so much of like, wait, what did she just say? She said that they got married in a month. Right. So how did you go from, oh, thanks for giving me Hudson as a worker, he's a really hard worker, to I do, you do, we have this happy combined family?
That is a great question because we still ask the same thing while we're going to bed that night. He's like, how did we end up here? I'm like, I have no idea, but I'm not going anywhere. You're kind of stuck. I don't know. I've never in my entire life, never. And I always would say, as I was going through my divorce and I dated all the types of walks of life, I always said, never again. I'll never get married again, Mama. I'm sorry. It'll never happen. And then Johnny came and I'm like, what in the world? Where have you been? And he's like, oh, sweet baby, right there down Reagan Road. Like, where have you been? I've been here. I don't know. We went from looking and thinking it would be funny. Oh, you know, kids all the same age. Ha, ha, ha. Funny joke. And then he got home from work 2 weeks later and invited me to go visit at his mom and dad's, which I've known his family my entire life. And I walked into that house and I felt like I was in my own parents' living room. And I'm like, okay, I don't ever want to leave here. Like, I can't go anywhere now. And so here we are 6 months later.
You mentioned before that you turned him down because he was too nice. And you said earlier on that it was more comfortable and more familiar to kind of keep yourself in survival mode, that sometimes it feels safer to be unsafe than it is to actually be safe. And so I know that Johnny is safe. What did that look like on the front end? Because this is kind of the first time that you've had someone who you don't have to be in survival mode. Was that an instant, I just let all my walls down and now I'm safe? Or did it take a little bit of work for that? Or is it still taking some work?
Oh gosh, it is still, that poor man. He has his work cut out for him. I am a very, very guarded human. And, you know, poor Johnny now, I'm more guarded than ever. Sometimes I feel like because I don't want to lose this safety. There are times where I go into survival mode or defense mode when I don't have to. And I know that. And I'll snap or I'll bite back, you know, and he's so soft and he never raises his voice. And it's like Crazy Katie and Calm Donnie. And it's like, oh my gosh, I have to like, and he'll sit there and he's so calm. He's like, babe, you're safe. This doesn't belong here. This doesn't need to be this way. And I'm like, you're right. And I'm sorry, you know, and I'm so thankful that every day that man wakes up and he's like, whatever version of Katie he's getting that day, he's like, I got it. We're here. You know, he brings out that little piece of me that I knew was still there. And I just had to find her. He's so safe. Sometimes it's scary. And I'm like, this is too good to be true. And I even had a little talk with baby Jesus the other day on the way to work, because I mean, the man, I could go in countless ways to tell you why he's a godsend, but he's so good. He is the definition of everything good. I mean, granted, he'll be sitting here after he hears this and be like, Katie, really? I'm so good. He has his flaws, guys. Like, I'm not going to act like he's perfect and we don't argue and all the things, but he's just so good. And I have to remind myself that he's going to take it away from me just because he blessed me with it. Like, I still feel very undeserving of this kind of love. And so I have to remind myself regularly, it's okay, Katie. God can bless you with it and not take it. I'm so fearful every day that something's going to happen. Used to, I was such a self-sabotaging type of person that the minute something good would happen in my life, I'd self-sabotage it. So I wanted to hurt it first so it wouldn't hurt me. And I have to remind myself, Katie, you do not want to hurt Don. Like, you don't want this to go away. Like, this is your life now. I'm a work in progress. But he's so patient.
And in another surprising turn of events, you guys recently made a rather large announcement that I think was also maybe expected, maybe somewhat unexpected, but would you care to share that as well?
Yes. So we recently found out that we're going to be bringing baby number 6 into this sweet world. It was, believe it or not, it was a shock. And my FaceTime video with him would definitely prove that. And not that we weren't, I mean, we're older. You know, he's 42, I'm 37. Our baby is 12. So we were, I know people think we're insane starting all over. But one of our biggest things when we did get married and we did contemplate or talk about, you know, if we'd want more kids or anything. And I'm like, we already have 5. That's kind of a lot. But we're truly experienced being pregnant or, you know, like raising a baby or having that with anybody that was safe. It was always survival mode. Even going through those stages with my kids. So despite 37-year-old and 42-year-old having a baby and starting all over and fresh, we're so thrilled. Like, we are over the moon excited. I've already Amazoned like a 12-pack of baby magic because I'm obsessed. And I've already bought clothes and do not know the gender. So we're just tickled. I'm so excited.
So I want to talk for a second about your kids on both ends, his kids, your kids, the kids, you know, you're one big happy family now. But I just imagine that perhaps it was like, wait, I mean, I told you that he was kind of cool to work for, but we're getting married a month later. Like, what is going on? So was there any shock in regards to how quickly things have changed amongst your family?
Weirdly enough, I know this is going to probably sound cliche or people like, oh yeah, okay. I'm not going to act like there's no bumps in the road, even with our kids. They argue like siblings do. They make up like siblings do. But it really was, I don't want to be dramatic, but it was like almost like a seamless transition. I swear it was like we've always been a family. I've always been like their bonus mom. They've always been had a bonus dad. We've always just been a family. The only thing that I think was Hudson, whenever I told him we were getting married, he was like, you know, typical teenage, bruh. I just told you he was my boss and he was cool. I didn't mean he got married, the man. And I'm like, I'm sorry. And he was like, I ain't even got my first paycheck yet. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, kid. I'm marrying your boss. I mean, it has its ups and downs sometimes. They, you know, Ava Grace and Gemma, they'll go round and round about who has whose Lulu leggings on and all the things. But it's pretty much been like we've always just meant to be a family.
I love that. Now, here you are, 37. That's very different from who you were at 17. If you had to go back and talk to younger Katie, Katie in the cheerleading skirt, Katie with the promise ring, Katie living that life, just hell-bent to take that right when everybody else was saying go left, what would you tell her?
Buckle up, baby girl. I would have done a lot of things different. You know, I know people tend to say, I wouldn't change anything because it's made me who I am today. And I always giggle because I'm like, y'all crazy. I would have changed everything. I mean, I do not like that version. I did not like those years. I don't know. I don't know if I would have changed. I don't know if I'd tell Katie anything different, because Johnny and I talk about that often. We are like, oh, what if we would have just gotten married all those years ago, you know, and had our own family. And I don't know if we would have appreciated each other as much as we do now. I don't know if we would be as happy about things or appreciative of things. I couldn't imagine my life without my three or without Gemma and Jew. You know, like, God really does know what he's doing. I think that we are all very hard-headed at times, and we think our free will is the best way, which was dumb on my part. But I don't think I would tell younger Katie any different, because it would have led me to somewhere totally different than where I'm at this very moment.
I am so grateful for your vulnerability. I know that this was not an easy conversation to have. I know it probably took some courage, a lot of courage, for you to be willing and just able to share your story. And so I'm grateful, because I think it matters. I truly believe that transparency builds community. And I think that there are women who need to hear these kinds of stories. They need to hear that they're going to be okay. They need to hear that they can have the strength to walk out, even if they've got absolutely nothing. And that there is a different life that can be waiting if they have the courage to step out. And so I'm just really grateful for your time and your courage.
Thank you for having me.
I always end with the same question, and that is, tell me something good. So it can be really small or really big, but in your life right now, what's good?
Obviously, it's this new baby that's on the way. I mean, I couldn't be overjoyed. And you recently had interviewed my mother-in-law, who, you know, she has her diagnosis with cancer. And truth be told, probably aside from our own children's reactions, my good, especially that keeps holding so dear to my heart, was the reaction of all of our parents, our sets of parents. Honestly, I don't know if I've ever seen my daddy smile so big in so long. Miss Frances's face when I told her, you know, it just, I hope it gives us all a reason for her to keep fighting a little bit longer and a little bit harder so she can meet that sweet thing.
Well, friend, I am so glad you made it here today. Would you do me a favor and share this episode with someone who might need it most? Also, I would love if you took just a moment to follow me over on Instagram. Head over to today's show notes for important links that you don't want to miss out on. I am grateful for rainbows that have come after a long season of storms in Katie's story. It wasn't easy. It took years of overcoming her own pain and brokenness and finally gaining the strength to break the cycle of abuse. As we prepared for the episode, she mentioned some of the things that she had endured and been through in previous relationships. Awful things, not just in her marriage, but in other relationships as well, as she struggled to find herself. And yet, out of the same mouth or by the same hands, she would hear things like, "You're beautiful. I need you. I don't know what comes over me. I'll fix this. Please don't leave." I wish there weren't so many of you listening whose hearts were a little tight right now hearing things like this. Tears brimming to your eyes because you know exactly what that's like. I wish it was easy to pull away from anything other than the very best that you deserve, but it isn't always easy. It doesn't always feel like there are rainbows just around the corner. And it's hard to know how on earth you can go on. Like Katie said, it's sometimes easier to just live in the crazy. Friend, please know that isn't the only way. We live in a broken world, but God never meant for us to stay broken. There is hope and healing when we allow ourselves to be changed and transformed by the only one who can. God has not forgotten about you. This is not just a story about one woman's broken home. This is a story about a God who redeems even the most broken parts of our lives. Maybe not the way we ever thought or hoped, but still with an ending far better than we ever could have imagined. This is a story of a God who always makes room for lovely.